Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, also is a host of a talk show on WCPT AM, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Senator.
Today we're talking about the governor, Bruce Rauner, and the Illinois state budget.
Okay.
Since he was elected in 2014, Governor Rauner and the state legislature did not pass a budget for fiscal 2015 and fiscal year 2016. And there's been an ongoing sort of public disagreement between Rauner and the Democratic legislative leaders about why there isn't a state budget, including so-called reforms that Rauner is interested in getting passed along with the state budget. And many believe that that's one of the reasons we have an impasse. In March, Rauner released a 30-second video in which he appears in a clean, well-lighted workshop.
A duct tape video?
Yes, and he's brandishing a roll of duct tape. And I know that on your radio program, you've talked about that quite a bit.
I had a lot of fun with that, the duct tape video, yeah.
Let's listen to that video.
Do we have to?
Illinois is broke and broken. And the politicians that got us into this mess, their solution is this. Higher taxes, more spending, no real reforms. After decades of ignoring problems, it's time someone fixes them. Our balanced budget plan freezes property taxes, caps spending, creates jobs, and puts term limits on politicians. Our plan brings real reforms to Illinois. Their duct tape solutions won't work anymore. We will fix Illinois together.
Yeah, thanks for playing that again. I hadn't heard that in about a week.
You haven't memorized it yet?
No, yeah. Dennis here at the station, the producer of my show, loves that. It's been a while since we've played it, but he loved that one for many different reasons. Most obviously, the phoniness of it all.
Well, in your writing and on the radio, you've consistently characterized these reforms that the governor wants before he'll approve a state budget as union busting.
Absolutely.
Are there any particular aspects of it that you consider threatening to unions?
Yeah. He wants to make Illinois a right-to-work state, and that means that effectively you don't have to join a union or you don't have to pay union dues if you're in a union. So that just kills unions because without dues, there's no money for the union to sustain itself. And so effectively, he's pretending as though an improvement, in other words, a reform, which is a word that's so abused in Illinois and should never be allowed to be used, he's pretending that such a quote-unquote improvement is necessary to help our state economy, when in fact, it would destroy the unions who are the backbone of the opposition to him. So it's a political move. It's his attempt to annihilate the opposition party. That's why I think it's a misuse of the word reform to call it a reform. It's a tactic, a political tactic.
You just talked about one particular, quote, reform, unquote, and that's the desire on the part of Rauner to have Illinois a right-to-work state, which is the situation in which workforce's members that are unionized can opt out of paying union dues.
Kills a union.
But is that the chief reform that you think is union busting?
Yeah, that's the most significant. Then there's getting rid of things like prevailing wage on public projects. You have to pay union workers on public projects the same amount that they pay at private projects, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the most significant one in terms of the impact it would have on the Democratic Party and the opposition to the Republicans would be the right to work.
Because that would undermine the union's revenues.
Yeah, you take away their money. You take away their money, they can't contribute to the Democrats. If they can't contribute to the Democrats have lost a huge source of income to fight the Republicans. Therefore, the Republicans are in a greater position of power. It's a clearly political move. The Republicans are financed largely through the contributions of major donors like Bruce Rauner. He gave $50 million. $50 million to himself, and Ken Griffin, who's his pal, a hedge fund operator, the richest man in the state of Illinois, just gave Bruce Rauner $20 million. So two guys get $70 million. The unions can't even compete with that, but they are a force. So they want to take that advantage. Rauner wants to take that advantage that he already has and maximize it by destroying the opposition. Aside from that, I believe there's also this ideological component. Maybe Rauner actually believes that somehow or other economy is stronger if the workers have no rights. I was just talking about this on the air today. I was just making a joke, making light of the fact that Trump and his allies and acolytes at the White House are lawyering up. They're hiring lawyers as they prepare for the special counsel's investigation of whether or not there was collusion with the Russians or what the president knew and when did he know it in regards to the Russians. They're all getting lawyers. Well, unions are effectively like lawyers for workers. They're representatives for workers. They represent workers. So people like Rauner have this belief that somehow or other what they have, what they use all the time, which is legal representation, ordinary people shouldn't have. And so it'd be better for the economy if they don't have it, but it's better for me if I have it. So I think it's pretty obvious what he's up to. But when he does the duct tape commercial, what he successfully does, I think to a certain degree, is to try to convince people that he has some benevolent motives as opposed to political ones.
The motives he has stated are that he wants to unshackle employers from onerous work rules that make it more costly for employers to operate in Illinois. And that's why he claims employers are fleeing Illinois.
Yeah, I don't see there's any correlation between it at all. But what does that have to do with unions? I mean, what does that have to do with right to work?
Well, he claims that unions drive up the cost of labor.
Well, they do. You know, duh, that's why they're good. You know, you want to get more money. So, you know, he thinks it's going to improve the economy by getting people to work for less, work more for less. How's that going to improve the economy? You're going to have less money to spend. I mean, it's a ridiculous argument. It's like, I know more money for me is good. Less money for you is good. And there's people who perhaps believe that. And in their heart of hearts, ideologically, they believe that our economy would grow if people made less money. I personally do not believe that. So it's an ideological struggle. But he's taking an ideological struggle, which works to his political partisan advantage, and trying to make it seem as though it's a benevolent good for the entire state, that everybody will benefit by it. And clearly, just as we pointed out, no, not everybody will benefit. Some people will benefit and other people won't. So it's incumbent upon unions, if they want to protect their interests and the interests of their members, to fight him. But if he successfully dries up their source of money, then he wins.
There's another argument, and I want to make sure that we clarify. Here we're talking about public sector unions, mm-hmm. In other words, unions that are representing staff of government agencies as opposed to private sector or corporate unions. And he and other Republicans believe that there's a conflict of interest among public sector unions in that, to put quite simply, tax dollars pay not only the staff salary, but that money is also used for the staff members to pay union dues. The union dues go to the unions, who then lobby and organize in opposition at times to certain government office holders and government policies. The argument goes, and that's a conflict of interest.
Well, the same conflict of interest exists when he takes money from Kenny Griffin and then oversees regulatory aspects of Illinois' business community that could keep Kenny Griffin from making more money.
But Ken Griffin's not contributing tax dollars. He's contributing his own dollars to
so what? The same principles at play. There's a conflict of interest. So there's a conflict of interest when he takes money from large developers and then lowers the taxes on the large developers. There's always a conflict of interest when you take money from other people. It seems to me that Bruce Rauner, in particular in the Republican Party, in general, has consistently tried to set up a situation where their supporters would be the beneficiary of government, and that's okay. That's reform. But when the other people who they're against or find their opponents try to get assistance from government, that's somehow or other taking advantage of a system, and that's inefficient or corrupt. And that's a very successful, again, political maneuver that they've done. It's rhetorical. It, of course, bears no relationship to the real world. I'll give you an example. One of the things they always talk about is they want what they call tort reform. They want the laws changed so that it's more difficult to bring a lawsuit to defend yourself or to seek compensation for some, like, a product liability where you've been damaged on the job or...
Or medical malpractice.
Medical malpractice. And they say, well, these lawsuits kill our economy. Okay, then if you do that, then that lowers the incentive for a lawyer to take your case. That means that you're less likely, if you're the victim of medical malpractice, to sue because there will be no lawyers. That's a huge advantage for the people who run the hospital, the people who run the factories, the people who are polluting the water, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let's even it out. Let's put a cap on the amount that the hospital can spend on its lawyer. You put a cap on the amount the plaintiff can spend, you know, that drives up the cost of medical services.
So a level playing field.
They're not interested in a level playing field. They're not interested in reform. They're not interested in fairness. They're interested in getting a political advantage. Everything that they do is rhetorically presented in a universal as though there's a principle behind it, when there's really no principle of fairness or reform behind it. It's all about getting an advantage. And so that's what Rauner did. He didn't invent this. This is what the Republican Party has been doing pretty much my entire lifetime, yours too. We're roughly the same generation. You're a little younger than me.
About 6 hours, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's what's going on. That's what Rauner is all about. Rauner's about maximizing his advantage by destroying his opposition. And he does that under the guise of looking out for the common man. He does these commercials where he's wearing these work outfits and he is in a tool shed or something, or workroom, which obviously was built for the set. And he's talking about duct tape and he drops his G's and he's trying to present himself as an everyday guy who's looking out for you. He's really just trying to get an advantage. He's trying to maximize the advantage he already has.
If I may, let me take one more example.
If I may. Go ahead. You may.
You just finished talking about the sort of right to work reform. Mm-hmm. Which I haven't heard as high a profile with respect to getting the state budget passed as I have around another so-called reform that the governor would like to see, and that is around property tax, freezing property tax.
Please don't call that a reform.
I said so-called.
Okay. Did you? Okay. Just make sure. Call it a change.
Listeners saw the air quotes, I'm sure. Yeah. So Rauner and his loyal Republicans in the state legislature have insisted that any budget deal include a state-mandated freeze on property taxes, which many have pointed out fund only local units of government. They don't affect the state budget. And here's Rauner speaking about this last March on WBEZ Radio.
We already have the fifth highest tax burden in America. And the highest tax that we have, the biggest problem we have, is our property tax. We've got to focus on helping bring down our property taxes. Here's a sad fact. In Illinois, we have more units of local government than any state in America. In fact, we have 2,000 more units of local government than any other state. And that leads to more bureaucracy, more cost, more patronage, more cronyism, more pensions, more tax bodies, and it's given us the highest taxes. We've got to shrink the bureaucracy, make our governments more consolidated, more efficient, and then that money that we save can go to economic growth and it can go into our schools and grow more jobs. This is what we're working hard to accomplish.
One of the reasons I like this is because I agree with part of it.
Which part?
Well, it's an objective fact that Illinois has more units of government straight up, just a pure number, than any other state in the union, and it has more per capita than any other state.
I'll take your on that one. I haven't seen the study, but I believe you. I don't believe Rauner. If it comes out of your mouth, I believe it. If it comes out of Rauner's mouth, I'm doubtful.
The number that has been independently corroborated by Better Government Association and others is around 7,000.
I saw a defense of township government. Did you see this?
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was township supervisors defending township government. Anyway, finish your thought. That is a valid point. Is that what you're saying?
That when you have duplicated government, for example, one that is used by some Democrats in Cook County. In fact, David Orr has talked about this, the county clerk, that David Orr runs an election system and the city of Chicago has its own board of elections. And he points out that efficiencies could be had by combining those two units of government.
Yeah.
Just like the state recently passed a law that allowed the Cook County Recorder of Deeds office to be folded into the county clerk's office. Mm-hmm. So there's some objective criteria around having duplication of government.
Efficiencies.
Yeah, efficiencies. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, many see Rauner's argument to not pass a state budget unless this property tax freeze is put into effect as sort of a cynical ploy to drive down the revenues of local governments, forcing them to do things like pay less to their unionized workforce or to privatize services.
Boy, it's cynical on many different levels. Let's start with the obvious one, which is that nobody likes to pay property taxes. We've seen that even J.P. Pritzker, a billionaire, has appealed his property
no
taxes.
No one is immune.
Nobody likes to pay taxes of any kind, except a few people maybe, particularly the property tax, which comes twice a year. It's a powerful punch with each blow. So it's a winning issue for a candidate to champion to say, I'm going to bring down the amount of money you have to pay in property tax. On the other hand, what he's not recognizing is that property tax is the chief way by which we fund our public schools. So if you freeze the property tax, one of the first problems you're going to have is to figure out how to adequately fund all public schools, and particularly actually in the suburbs, which pay more per capita for their kids than we do in the city because they have more taxes available to pay for it and they have fewer distractions like our TIF program. So they're not wasting money. So yeah, it's a very cynical point because if you're not going to give the money from the state to replace the money that you're cutting in property taxes, how are you going to fund your schools? So he's allowing people to believe that they're going to get a cut in their property taxes and they're going to get a savings, when in reality, they're going to probably have to compensate for what they're not paying in property taxes with higher state taxes or higher utility taxes or more user fees or something else, because you have to pay for your schools. Or you're going to have a horrendous situation like we're having in our university system where we're not funding education. So it's a real cynical ploy by Bruce Rauner. He knows that cuts in property taxes and freeze in property taxes are very popular and it polls well and that he could probably win over support. It's all part of his larger effort to sort of convince people who don't live in Chicago, particularly south of Chicago, that somehow or other they're paying for Chicago. They're paying for the people in Chicago. It's all part of a political effort. I keep saying that. A political effort to take control of the state of Illinois, actually. He already has the executive. He's the governor. And maybe if he's really successful, he'll take control of the state house as well, particularly if he gets in charge of redistricting, if he wins re-election and can draw the maps in 2020 or 2021. So you're right. There's a kernel of truth to it. There are too many governments. There is overlap. We could be more efficient. I always say this to you, Dave. I've said this to you for 8 years. You know, if we really are serious, we want to discuss and analyze how we do things and how we could be more efficient, that's one thing. But if we just want to manipulate the system to get a political advantage, that's something else. And I think that's clearly what Bruce Rauner is all about. That end, I might add, I've never seen this in any other politician. It seems as though he has a determination to drive the city, definitely the Chicago Public Schools, bankrupt. I mean, he did endorse a bill that would allow the public schools to go bankrupt. And when you see the fact that the schools are so broke, in part because they don't get enough state aid, also in part because we waste the money that we have and we so poorly oversee the money that we spend. The schools are so bankrupt now, Dave. I just saw this in your beloved Chicago Tribune. There was an article, I think it's $70,000 a day. Did you see that same article?
Yeah.
For the latest borrowing scheme. I mean, that's just outrageous. All that money that's not going to the classroom, it's going to the lenders who lend us the money to pay our operational bills. Well, the less money the school has to pay its day-to-day bills, the more money it's going to borrow, the greater the interest payments are going to have to pay just to run the system. Sometimes I think he's just taking care of his pals as we move toward more borrowing. In the name of efficiency, we're borrowing more money than we've ever did. That's efficient.
So we have the governor representing what you say is taking care of his pals in a different way to voters, talking about government efficiency, talking about the need to keep employers from fleeing the state. So he's representing his position to voters in one way, but actually has what you might call a hidden agenda. So I wonder whether you see any parallels to another chief executive, namely former President Barack Obama. You wrote about Obama in a Reader article on May 25th, 2017, a rising star who's only too human. Online, it's called Rising Star Reveals a Young Barack Obama Who's All Too Human.
Oh, yeah. I remember that article, yeah.
You wrote about a recently released biography of Obama called Rising Star by David Garrell. You wrote that officials like then State Senator Barack Obama, quote, mastered the art of talking like progressives while making sure they didn't do anything that might piss off the boss, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You also identified some of Obama's sort of non-progressive actions on your radio show back in April when you were talking with former school principal Troy LaRavier.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to what you said.
Oh, God, you're going to hold what I said against me? What do you think I am, Bruce Rauner?
All day, all week, all month, I've been making fun of Trump voters who are blindly loyal to Trump no matter what he does, no matter how many programs that benefit them that he cuts, no matter how many promises he breaks. Are we any different as Obama supporters, particularly in the educational issue? I mean, Obama gave us Rahm Emanuel, basically ushered him in as our mayor. Obama was the charter school president. Obama was the president who supported some of the goofy Clinton initiatives in terms of borrowing money to pay for programs that we just pay out of taxes. Are we being too easy on Obama when we talk about his legacy in education?
I had a cold that day. You notice? You sound like Rod Stewart.
But you've got
Bob Dylan. Yeah, Obama.
I'd like to hear your Bob Dylan impersonation sometime.
No, sorry, maybe another time.
Well, it strikes me that Obama and Rauner are alike in that they've led voters to believe that they're working in the voters' interests, but they're actually working to advance the interests of the wealthy and the powerful in some respects.
Oh, this is a Green Party guy coming at me. I've had a lot of that this week.
Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, I disagree with that. Well, okay. You hit on a truth, and that is that politicians, this is one of the themes I've been hammered at my whole life, Dave. They say one thing and they do something else, or they dress up what they do with greater, more noble trappings. So in the case of Rauner, as we just said, his attempt to get more power to the Republicans and crush the opposition is dressed up as somehow or other reform that will help the working man. In the case of Obama, what he was trying to do, in my humble opinion, was to present as progressive as he could policy without inflaming the entrenched powers that be in corporate America. This is sort of a tactic he inherited from the Clintons and that he was very skillful at doing. So look at his healthcare policy. The notion that we all have healthcare is like a progressive idea. I think it's an absolute universal idea. I think it should just be, duh, you know, it's like public education. We should have healthcare. But in this country, there's this entrenched opposition to it that's part ideological, it's part market-driven, and at some point they come together. So how are you going to finesse that? So instead of doing it the way Bernie Sanders says, this is a right we have. That's my Bernie Sanders
that's
invitation.
Much better than your Bob Dylan impersonation.
This is this is the rate we have.
Maybe so, not.
Maybe not, yeah. Right. So instead of doing it that way and coming right out and saying exactly what it means, he's, well, I can work with the business people. We have common interests. We want to make it more efficient. And so he sort of dresses it up in this bipartisan cloak of, you know, admiring markets and free markets. And it's his way of trying to get corporate America to swallow this pill. So I believe he has more noble
ambitions,
aspirations than Rauner does. I think Rauner's aspirations are all naked power grab for corporate America and himself and his pals and the Republican Party. And I think Barack Obama is trying to advance a progressive goal in terms of education. And I've been saying this to you for years. I think all the Democrats of the last 10 years bought into this charter school nonsense because they thought it was their way of winning over swing voters, getting editorial writers from the East Coast and the New York Times, the Washington Post, to look at them as different kind of Democrat, not one that's wedded to the unions. Just the thing you started off by asking about, the teachers union, like the teachers union is this evil force that's like corrupting public education, which is so pure and sacred. We all just want to learn. That's all we want to grow. But these teachers with their like selfish, greedy ambition to make more money, like they're going into it to be rich. And Obama played into that. That's what I was getting at with Troy and that question. That whole thing about the charter schools, it's like this is a way of kind of positioning ourselves to win over swing voters because we're not beholden to unions. We're different. And of course, many of these swing voters, I like to point out, live in suburbs where great public schools, all of which are union schools. So they're really talking about unions in big cities where poor kids go.
Ben, some would argue that the reason for this, let's call it triangulation that you're talking about, was not to persuade swing voters, but to attract the same kind of deep-pocketed funders as the Republicans did.
Absolutely. Same thing. Yeah. Swing voters, corporate donors, pundits.
Of those three, I submit that the Democrats' desire to shift their positions the way you described was mostly to attract the deep-pocketed funders.
Well, it's all three. Whatever. We could argue that point. Like, is it more for the swing voters, more for the corporate donors, more for the pundits? I would say pundits are third in that list. Maybe the donors number one, but you can't win the election without the swing voters. And this gets at the heart of what I've been obsessed with for the last couple of months, Dave. I just wrote about it for the reader. It's like this notion that the Democrats dedicated themselves to what you're talking about, triangulation. I think that Clinton came up with that term. Bill Clinton, not Hillary, and Obama mastered it. And Rahm, to a certain degree, is practicing it, though he's not nearly as skillful as Clinton or Obama because he can't emanate any kind of like humanness. You know what I mean? Like there's something about him that just grates on people. So it's harder to persuade them that he's actually looking out for their interests. But that's part of the reason why Trump won. I really have come to believe that because Democrats didn't stand up for people when times were hard over the last 4 or 5 years, and they waffled and they diluted what they supposedly believed in. And they were trying to, as you say, serve all these different masters. The end result is twofold. Rural voters or working class voters or whatever you want to call them, white people in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio, instead of voting for Hillary Clinton, voted for Donald Trump. Black voters on the west and south side of Chicago and neighborhoods like that throughout the country didn't vote. So you combine with people who would ordinarily or should be your allies going for Trump and people who are definitely your allies not voting at all, you're going to lose. So it's a losing strategy.
So by going for these groups of people that you just talked about, they alienated their base.
They alienated their base. I've been saying this for years. And most of the time when I said it, the mainstream Dems in this town, like, oh, Ben, there you go again. You know, that's my Joe Moore imitation. There you go again. Hey, I've done Dylan. I've done Joe Moore.
That's Moore doing Ronald Reagan.
There you go again. That was actually Joe Moore doing Bernie Stone. Ben, the problem with you liberals. So, yeah, I do believe that the Democratic Party tied itself to a losing strategy, if you will, and because they diluted what they supposedly represent, and they lost their voters. That and the Russians, you know, intervened.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, let's not go there. My Green Party people go crazy when I talk about that. The Russians don't matter.
That's
okay?
All we've got time for, Ben.
We don't want to talk about the Russians.
Well, thanks for talking with me about this.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we always welcome your comments. You can tweet us on Twitter at CHIGOVT. And we're announcing today that our first audiobook has come out. It's Years of Our Interviews About Tax Increment Financing. Fascinating, fascinating.
I love
listening.
It. I can talk about it all day, all night. So can Dave. He tries to pretend like he's above it all. Isn't that really interesting, Tiff?
Well, if you want proof of the fact that we can talk about it all day and night.
8 years of talking about tips.
You can check out our audiobook. You can go to audible.com and search for Ben Jarofsky. You can also find it on iTunes. I'm Dave Glowes. Thanks for listening.